the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse. Wait for it. 100 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Just this knob for a second. And today is Monday, January the 14th, 2008. If you are listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Monday evening in early January of 2008, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to phone in and talk to myself and to the guest who will be appearing shortly after the introduction. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. If you have unlimited long distance, you could use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. That's 304-658-3333. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the emails during the break. And let's see. Show site, yes, that's strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from the previous shows. You'll find links there to the chat room, which is active as I speak, and you'll find links also to Head On Radio Network's main site, where you can find out about all of the progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, of which I'm only a small part. Find links there to Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and you'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. Wow, what a weekend. I had a wonderful weekend. I trust that everyone else did, too. Just about had such a wonderful weekend. It restored my faith in God. I've got to... I've had a wonderful weekend, and I'll tell you all about that one day. Today is not the day, but one day I will tell you all about it. Want to tell you that, oh yes, Friday evening, wow, wasn't that that was incredible. You know, we got to about, 10:30, something like that, and suddenly the service to the studio in West Virginia went poof, and that was all there was to it. There was no connectivity left. We finally restored it after, 10 or 15 minutes. It's what you'd call an unruly show Friday evening, an irregular show Friday evening, but we seem to be stable this evening. My end seems stable, and the studio seems stable, and that's all good news. So we're looking for a smooth sail tonight. Our guest this evening, who will be joining us in just a moment, is Jeff Lutz. Now, Jeff Lutz has been with us before. Jeff is the executive director of SoulForce. Jeff was with us in July, shortly, I think about a month or so after the show premiered. He was on July 25th. If you missed that interview, you might like to go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com and click on the July calendar. You'll see him in the 25th. There's an audio archive there. During that interview, Jeff and I, I guess he was with us the full 2 hours. We discussed SoulForce in great depth, and there were many interesting things that were revealed. I encourage you to go back and listen to that if you have the opportunity to do that soon. This evening, Jeff and I will be talking about a couple of current programs and things that are happening there at SoulForce, which is, those people are always busy. It will be an interesting talk. Of course, Jeff, being the executive director, is responsible for managing the day-to-day operations. Jeff is a licensed counselor also in private practice. He's directed treatment programs in both hospitals and community health settings. He is a member of the American Counseling Association, the American Association of Pastoral Counselors, the Council on Contemporary Families, and has written for numerous newspapers, and normally on the issues of same-gender couples and the issues that their families face. Jeff has been with his partner for 10 years. His partner is Gary, and they are the proud fathers of three children. Jeff, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Thank you, Peter. It's my pleasure.
It's my pleasure to have you back. You're a wonderful guest. Can you hear me all right this evening, Jeff?
I sure can.
Wonderful. That's good to know. Jeff, before we get into the current excitement, and I'm amazed at some of the things you're doing here, especially regarding the Methodist Church, which was my stomping ground, maybe you could tell us a little bit about Soul Force for the folks who may be new to some, or some may have missed the previous interview.
Sure. Soul Force is a civil rights and social justice organization that was started 10 years ago. We're getting ready to celebrate our 10th anniversary. We were started by the Reverend Dr. Mel White, who through a series of events became very interested in the principles of nonviolence that Gandhi and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. taught. And we began to apply those principles of nonviolence to the work of social justice for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people.
I remember during our previous conversation, you impressed me greatly because the fact we cover so many nasty news stories here, everybody from the American Family Association to Focus on the Family, we tend to get a little angry and impatient. You restored my faith in a kinder, gentler approach. I remember that discussion well. In fact, I brought it up with several other guests over the past months. We appreciate your being on. Jeff, tell us what's going on. What is this Can We Talk with six megachurches? You see, this is the sort of thing you can do that I couldn't do because I'm just so angry at these people. Tell us about Can We Talk, please.
It's actually called the American Family Outing is the name of the project, the American Family Outing. And we developed this project because we became aware that the face of evangelical leaders in America is beginning to shift. You know, last year we saw the passing of Jerry Falwell. We also saw the passing of D. James Kennedy, who is lesser known but nonetheless extremely influential for many decades within evangelical circles and extremely anti-gay. We saw both of them pass away. Pat Robertson and James Dobson are still very active but getting older. And as that's happening, we're seeing a number of new pastors, new what we're calling emerging evangelical leaders across the country who are developing these humongous mega churches with tens of thousands that attend in a single weekend. And not only that, they influence a lot of millions of the public through best-selling books and weekly radio and television programs. And so we felt it was really important, since they're the emerging leaders, to at least make an effort to begin to have a conversation about faith and family and sexuality, LGBT folks, with them and with their congregations. And so we chose six of the most well-known evangelical leaders, folks like Joel Osteen, who's been on People magazine recently, and Larry King Live several times this year, as well as Rick Warren, who wrote The Purpose-Driven Life, and several others. And we've written letters to them, and we're hoping to go visit with them and initiate dialogue between Mother's Day and Father's Day. And we're taking our own families. We're taking two moms and two dads with their kids, and we're taking couples without children, and we're taking single folks who just want to do this with a member of their extended family, just lots of diverse forms of family to meet their families in initiating this dialogue.
Well, the name Rick Warren is, of course, huge. I recognize some of the others also, but Rick Warren stands out. In fact, there are many churches, a Methodist church in Tallahassee, for instance, that I attended a series that went on for a couple of months where we went through a book called A Purpose-Driven Life. He is, of course, highly influential. And what do you think? Have these people responded? Are you going in against their will, or how is this working?
No, we wrote them early December. And so to give them the benefit of the doubt, I know that they're all very busy with the holiday plans for the churches, and we haven't heard from them yet, but a lot of this is modeled after our equality ride. And during the equality ride, when the young adults visited the colleges and campuses that ban LGBT students, the universities often did not respond to the first letter. It took a couple of efforts. So we're hopeful that with continued effort reaching out to them and extending this invitation that they'll want to do that. And we recently were pleased to find out that Jay Baker, the son of Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, is very excited. I talked to him today, and he's very excited about joining us and being a clergy leader for these discussions. So we'll just see how it goes.
Well, that's interesting that he's joining you. In fact, I was not aware that Tammy Faye Baker was as friendly to the LGBT community as she was until I saw the movie called, I think, The Eyes of Tammy Faye. She became a huge icon. Bless her heart. She's passed now, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Right. And Faye, really, there's a recent documentary that's out about his life and his new ministry, and he's a person of faith. He certainly believes in God and has a church in New York City that is reaching out to people who would not normally want to come to church because they've been rejected, not just gay and lesbian folks, but all kinds of folks that have been rejected by the institution of church. And he's doing great work there, and he had took a really brave stance, I think sometime in 2006, and began to speak out in favor of gay marriage, and was really lost a lot of his donors because of taking that stance, and yet has stayed true and loyal to our community despite those challenges.
Jeff, what is the, or if you can, tell us a little bit about the overall profile of these mega churches. Do they tend to be younger couples with kids, or and what sort of services is it? Is it primarily youth oriented? This is interesting to me. We normally have a negative opinion of mega churches around here, so maybe you could tell us some more about them.
Well, you know, the six churches that we've selected are all different in some ways. But most of them fit the profile of being highly energetic, lots of great music. You know, Joel Osteen's church is in the old Compaq Center, the old basketball center in Houston, Texas. I mean, it's just enormous. Huge video screens, a lot going on. I think it appeals to people of all ages, but yes, there's probably a younger crowd, there's a family crowd, and it's all generally very, very positive. Joel Osteen talks a lot about prosperity, and these guys like to, in general, stay away from the wedge issues. They're not as divisive as what we might refer to as the old guard, the Dobsons and the Falwells. They stay away from that, those negative messages that divide people, and that's great. You know, that they've decided to shy away from that. The problem is, you know, that old thing about silence equals death. It's not good enough to just not go there and not talk negatively about gay and lesbian people. We need clergy leaders. We need evangelical leaders who are willing to take a stand on our behalf. And we know, for instance, that many of these churches we're about to visit have gay and lesbian people who attend the worship service because, again, the services are so dynamic and powerful. And they're welcome. These churches often are welcoming to gay and lesbian people, but they're not affirming. And by that I mean, if you want to come and sit in the pews and attend the service, you're more than welcome. But the moment that you want to get involved in the life of the church, the moment that you might want to volunteer to teach a Sunday school class or to step into some kind of leadership position or to head up a committee, that's when you begin to run into trouble. That's what people are telling us. that at that point your identity begins to emerge within the church, and they really don't want the visible faces of out and proud gay and lesbian people and same gender couples. So that's where it gets kind of tricky, and we want to talk to them about that.
Well, Jeff, do we dare hope that you will be allowed to actually speak to the congregation as a whole, perhaps in some sort of special service, the families with the kids, perhaps being on the stage or at the front of the church at the same time? What is the goal here? This is fascinating.
Well, anything could happen, but that's not specifically what we asked for. What we asked for, we told them the weekends, there are six weekends that were consecutively that we're going to six different churches, and we told them when the weekend that we would be there, and we've asked them to contact us to collaborate on working out the details. But in general, what we would like is a roughly equivalent number of their families to just sit down at the table and share a meal with our families, and then afterwards to have some kind of structured dialogue, perhaps a panel discussion. So, these mega churches have thousands and thousands of members, and we're really proposing a discussion of several dozen, a small group, a small subset of that. But the conversation has to start somewhere, and sometimes there's a ripple effect. And in the work of Soul Force that we do, we often see those small ripple effects that may take many more years to come to full fruition, but nonetheless, they're important ripple effects, and we've got to start the conversation somewhere.
Well, Jeff, that almost brings tears to my eyes. The power of breaking bread with others is a very powerful thing. It tends to break down barriers very quickly. Jeff, tell us about the children. Are they all ages? And what is the? Tell us about the children. This is also interesting.
The children that are part of the American Family Outing?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we're still accepting applications through the 21st of this month, and so we're still kind of going through those. And we just really at this point have children of all ages. My kids, for instance, are 4, 5, and 11. We have a number of other children that are right in and around those same ages. We have some teenage children. We have single parents that are bringing kids that are in their teens and even in their 20s. So we really sort of broadened the definition family to include the reality that there are all kinds of different ways that people do family out there, and they all have an important voice and an important story to share, and we want that message to get out there. But we're particularly proud of showing off our kids. I think that's a story that sometimes gets buried in the discussion, and that's probably a point of connection, a point where we can build a bridge. I think for the most part, the people that attend the churches we're about to visit are really good folks with a good heart, and I think we can connect around how much we love our kids, how much we care about family, and hopefully use that as a bridge to begin talking about the places where we differ.
Jeff, we often talk here. I remember there was a quote, I believe it was Jerry Falwell who once said if the LGBT folks didn't exist, he would have to create them or make them up, because it's such a powerful fundraising issue.
He actually said that to our founder, Mel White, who used to work for Jerry Falwell back when he was a closeted gay man. And Mel and Jerry Falwell were in a car at one point when some LGBT protesters came by, and Jerry made that comment.
Another church that we talk about, a mega church, would be the focus on the family. operation in Denver, we are told that they receive much funding by beating the LGBT thing into the ground. What's interesting here is the churches that you're talking about, Lakewood Church of Houston, the Saddleback Church, Willow Creek Community Church in Barrington, Illinois, these churches are hugely successful and vibrant operations, yet they don't do this. This seems to be proof that it's not necessary to beat LGBT people into the ground to make money.
That's right, and I think that's part of what gives us some hope that maybe they will be even more willing. I suspect that they're a bit anxious. They don't know us, and this is a difficult and challenging conversation to have sometimes, but we're hopeful that because of their overall approach and the way they run their churches, that they will want to have this conversation with us.
Well, Jeff, tell us about the organizations, if you would, that are joining you. I understand Metropolitan Community Churches and NBJC. I think most of us know about Metropolitan Community Churches, but we know very little about NBJC and Collage. Could you tell us about those, please?
Sure. The NBJC is the National Black Justice Coalition that works to challenge homophobia and advance equality for LGBT folks, particularly within the African American communities. And I'm just beginning to know them and work with their staff, and I'm quite impressed with the work that they're doing. And Collage has been around for several years. Collage provides support and education for children who have gay and lesbian parents. And so, you know, I think all of the organizations, including UFMCC, Metropolitan Community Churches, are all sort of bringing different skill sets and talents and knowledge bases to this project. And I'm hoping and praying that it's going to be something that starts an ongoing conversation. We don't want this to just be a one-weekend visit. We hope that this will initiate some small conversations that happen between families, some friendships that develop from here on out.
Well, this is of interest to me. I frankly had to look up, when I read information about you today, I had to look up NBJC and Collage. They are both organizations that I would love to have on the show. I'm sure I'll be contacting them soon. So many groups who are not high profile who do such wonderful things, and of course, we've had Nancy Wilson from MCC on, but these other two organizations completely under my radar.
Well, I would highly encourage you to contact them. I'm impressed with the work that they do, and I think they it would be great for your listeners to learn more about them.
Jeff, tell us about SoulForce Q. What is that?
SoulForce Q is our relatively new young adults division. They were launched in 2006, actually the tail end of 2005, with really what is our one of our premier projects at SoulForce, and that's the Equality Ride. They got together, they developed the idea for the Equality Ride based on the Freedom Rides during the Civil Rights Movement, and from there put that together so that they could begin to visit 7 weeks on the road in a bus and have conversations with Christian colleges and universities that ban LGBT students. And this year, the Equality Ride is in the fall instead of in the spring, like it's been the last 2 years. And they're going to concentrate on the Deep South, and they're also going to visit more historically black colleges and universities. And so I'm very excited about the work they do. They're getting ready next month to launch the second Right to Marry campaign in New York City, where young people, 20-somethings, are combing the state of New York from one corner to the next, talking to not only legislators but business owners and people of influence in the community about the right to marry, about marriage equality, and the need for you know, for the right for gay and lesbian folks to enjoy the privileges and responsibilities of marriage. So they're a dynamic group, and they bring a fresh face and a fresh perspective, and it's a perspective that those of us who are older can benefit from listening to, and I'm really proud to have them as part of our organization. They dubbed themselves Soul Force Q, and the name just stuck.
Well, I have to say they're very brave people. They go places that they're not welcome. I understand they were turned away from Liberty University, and they've had been vandalism to the bus at some point. I understand, too, that you can support these people, or support the individuals rather, by going to the Soul Force site, and one can sponsor one of these kids to ride the bus?
Yes, you know, we're such a grassroots organization that we rely on people out in the community all across the country who would like to be a part of our work, but perhaps for one reason or another, they can't actually walk or march or join us for direct action, but they'd like to sponsor a family, for instance. We're going to put these families that are visiting the mega churches up on our website soon, and you can go online and sponsor a family with a donation. Or this fall, the young people that are part of the Equality Ride, their profile will be up. And if there's a young person from your town or your state, or just a young person that whose story grabs your heart, you can sponsor them. So that's really how we do our work, is through the support of the community.
Well, Jeff, moving to the 10th anniversary and reunion, this is huge. Apparently, you're doing this in Texas, and you're going to be involved with the Methodist Church regarding their general compasses. This blows me away. Tell us about what's going to happen in the time frame for this.
Well, the plans are still being developed, but when Soul Force got its name and began developing some infrastructure in mid to late 1998, and so we're celebrating 10 years this year. Our first direct action wasn't until we went to see Jerry Falwell in 99, but we really got everything going in 98. And in the early years, much of our work was concentrated on the different denominational gatherings. We would write letters to the leaders of the Southern Baptist Convention, the Methodists, the Lutherans, you name it. And the principles of nonviolence taught by Gandhi and King say that first you make every effort to dialogue. And if your adversary will come to the table and have the conversation, that's what you want. And with a pure heart and really ready and willing to listen. It's only when they refuse to meet with you or pretend to have a conversation, but they're not really having one, they're just going through the motions, that's when Gandhi and King said you move to direct action. So in the early years, because we wrote letters and these leaders would refuse to have a conversation with us, we moved to direct action and did a number of vigils and protests and sometimes civil disobedience at these conventions. And we were present in 2000 and 2004. We've had in those Methodist conferences, one of them, Arun Gandhi, Gandhi's grandson, attended and was arrested with us. And another one, Yolanda King, who passed away last year, one of Dr. King's daughters, was present with us. So we've had some real civil rights heroes that have been part of these Methodist direct actions. And we just felt it was really fitting to go back this year and to wrap that into our 10-year anniversary celebration.
Having come from a Methodist background, in fact, I still go to a little rural Methodist church out here, the church I grew up in, just a few miles down the road. And I, when I'm able to, go to an MCC in Tallahassee also in the evenings. But I'm a member of the Methodist Church, and my listeners are probably tired of saying this. There are probably people screaming right now. But nonetheless, the Methodist Church being the second largest Protestant denomination aside from the Southern Baptist, In my reading over the last couple of years, the Methodist Church is being highly focused right now by the IRD, the Institute on Religion and Democracy, and this is further demonstrated by Halsinger, James Halsinger, who's the, you listeners recall, he's the Surgeon General nominee that was so controversial about his views about LGBT folks. Now, Halsinger is a member of something called the Confessing Movement. Can you give us an idea of what you're up against in the Methodist Church? Because my understanding is the Board of Regents, here we go to the Bush Library being located at Southern Methodist University. It's my understanding that the Board of Regents there is almost a wholly owned subsidiary of the IRD. What are your thoughts about this and what's going on in the Methodist Church?
Well, certainly, Peter, everything that you just said is true. We know that the Institute of Religion and Democracy, IRD, has a huge influence, as well as other very, very conservative factions within the Methodist Church. We do have friends within the Methodist Church who are working on our behalf, but overall, it appears, and we're told, that there's a number of reasons to be concerned that the denomination is actually going backwards rather than forwards. In fact, we know that it looks like the whole issue around transgender people is going to be really talked about at this conference in Fort Worth. And in fact, there are even factions of Methodist delegates who want to propose church legislation that would ban LGBT people from even becoming members of the church. So here, while some denominations have or are in the, seem to be moving in the direction of ordaining openly gay clergy, the Methodist Church is going backwards about and debating whether or not we can even be members. And so that's why we just feel like it's really important that we go. I think often what they want to do is sort of have the discussion, have the vote, but do it very quietly and kind of under the radar. And then they come out with the policy and it ruins lives. But they don't want the discussion to be very public. They want to try to contain it. And part of what SoulForce does is say, oh no, we're going to expose that. We're going to make that very visible to the public, and we're going to educate others about what's going on here and then resist it through our direct action. So we'll see what happens.
Would you say that this movement backwards, and for our listeners who have not heard me ranting about the IRD, the Institute on Religion and Democracy is a privately funded, very deep-pocketed, I suppose you could call it a think tank, and their goal is to, let's see, how can I put it, to shape the church so that it, for the good of the government or for conservatism versus for the good and the message of Christ, such being that these divisive issues are introduced. Is that a fair assessment, Jeff?
I think so, Peter. We have members of my planning team who are much more knowledgeable about the IRD than I am, but that seems to be a fair summary of their position and their strategy.
Jeff, in 2000 at the General Conference of the United Methodist Church, it was in Cleveland, Ohio, I believe, 200 SoulForce volunteers were arrested, according to what I'm reading here. It was a nonviolent action, but nonetheless, you were arrested. Methodist bishops were also arrested who were demonstrating, or I'm not sure what you were doing. Do you expect that to happen again this year?
That's part of what we're talking about right now. Every time we go to one of these, we spend hours and hours in discussion, doing the research, finding out what church policy is going to be debated, what new legislation is likely to be introduced, and then based on that, we try to make some informed decisions about what our presence might look like. And it could be anything from, we will certainly be writing letters to the delegates starting very soon, asking for conversation. We will certainly be vigiling there again so that this issue cannot remain destructively invisible. We'll make sure it's visible and public. And if it's warranted, we may engage in some kind of civil disobedience. Again, we're being told that many of the Methodists would rather just not have the conversation at the conference. But it reminds me of Dr. King's letter from Birmingham Jail, in which the white clergy of the day had chastised Dr. King and said, we don't understand why you're doing these marches and you're speaking out so strongly. Just give it time. And Dr. King talked about how inappropriate it was for the oppressed to wait for justice on the timetable of those who are doing the oppressing. For those who are doing the oppressing to turn around and say, just be patient, just give it time, is not only disrespectful, it's demeaning and demoralizing. And we have to demand justice now. And we know that those kinds of things sometimes take time, but we have to make our voice heard.
Another thing that is of concern to me, and very likely to you, is that this is taking place in Texas, which would mean, I think, a large number of attendees for this particular general conference are going to be from the South and the Southeast and deeply from the Bible Belt. It would seem to me that there's the potential for even more resistance. The Methodist Church is so dual-minded. You have peace and justice oriented churches in the West Coast, and in the Southeast they tend to be much more like Baptists. I'm not sure what Methodists do in the Northeast, that I don't know. But is the location of concern to you, the fact that it's in Fort Worth of all places?
Not so much so, in the sense that the delegates, we'll really be dealing mostly with the delegates, and I'm not sure that location will play that much of a factor, but it could. You might be right.
Jeff, what is the overall schedule? This is beginning April 25th, and it's going to extend over. I mean, that's your anniversary reunion on the 25th, is that right? And it extends over for a week or so for the UMC conference. What is the scheduling?
The UMC General Conference is from Wednesday, April 23rd until Friday, May the 2nd. We're going to be there and have in a different hotel on Friday night, the 25th, just a time of gathering. And some celebration, a montage video that shows our 10 years of work, and a chance for original Soul Forcers, people all across the country who were a part of us in the early years, to come back and see old friends and meet new friends. And so that night will just be a lot of fun. And then we'll get up Saturday morning, the 26th, and we'll have at least 2 days of very intensive direct action throughout Saturday and Sunday. The specifics of that, what that will look like, are still being planned, but that's really when we're planning to have a very strong, visible presence. And then we realize that many people then need to go back to work during the week, but the Methodist Conference goes on the whole following week from the 28th through May 2nd. And so we hope to have a smaller delegation of volunteers that are with us to continue our work that week.
Jeff, I have to say to you, and it was something that I noticed the last time you were on the show, you have such a kindness about you that in the face of such discrimination and antipathy, I truly admire you. And of the several people who, for instance, Jimmy Creech has been on the show, you've been on the show, all of these people have had such a kind, and you amaze me, sir. And I am deeply grateful for what you do.
Oh, Peter, well, it's my pleasure, and it's difficult work, and we all have to find our way to do it, and I don't think any of us would be human if we didn't occasionally, and sometimes more than occasionally, feel some justified anger at the discrimination and the bigotry that exists, particularly, unfortunately, within some religious communities. But I think what's helpful, according to Gandhi and King, and I mess it up every single day, it seems like, but to try to remember that people are not the enemy. Misinformation is. And for me, it's helpful to remember the work that many of us as LGBT people had to do to unpack the lies and come to a place of self-acceptance. Many straight Americans in the community, many people of faith, they have to do a lot of work too, and it's challenging and it's scary for them. I think sometimes at the core they realize that if they begin to question what they've been taught theologically about LGBT people, if they take that card out of the house of cards, then the whole theological house of cards may begin to crumble, and they may have to question a whole number of other issues and items that have been part of their faith for many years. And so that's why they often just kind of stay in that locked down position instead of messing with the cards. So it's hard work, and I appreciate what you do, getting the word out about what's going on in the community.
Thank you, Jeff. Jeff, I've kept you on longer than I had committed to Paige today when I spoke with her. In closing, are there things that you'd like to say that I haven't addressed? I've been throwing questions at you, but oftentimes I don't hit anything that or hit close to, but not exactly what a guest would like to say. Are there things you'd like to say just without my asking?
You've done it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I love your very relaxed conversational style, and that helps me a lot too. I guess the only thing I would say is, for those who are listening who think they might like to be part of our work but are anxious or afraid, I would just encourage them to check us out and to consider coming to an action and being part of the training and participating. You'll find that you have more courage than you think, and your voice is very important, and it takes all of us to build a movement.
Jeff, I want you to know that you're most welcome to call back and talk to this show at any time you like. You don't have to wait for an interview or a set time. We're always interested in hearing from you. By all means, please use the 800 number. But as regarding interviews, could we set up not right this moment. I'll talk to Paige. But could we set up something after you get back from this 10th anniversary in the Methodist Church? Could we talk to you again to find out how it went?
Sure. That would be my pleasure, Peter.
And that will be probably in March, I think. This takes place at the end of April. Is that right?
End of April. So you and I, if you wanted to talk afterwards, then we could talk in early May.
Yes, May. I there was a time I could think of the months in order. Jeff, you're a delightful guest, as usual. And thank you to Paige. Please thank her for me. And thank you for all you do and for being on the show this evening. That's Jeff Lutz. Thank you, Jeff.
Sure, buddy. Have a good night.
You too, sir. Good evening to you. And that is Jeff Lutz, the executive director of Soul Force, the organization he and Mel White are primarily involved in, and many other very dedicated people who actually have hearts that care, that are still functional and haven't been beaten to death by what's going on the last few years of this Republican nightmare. So as we come up on the break, you're listening to Strictly Confidential. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. I'm your host, Peter Godbull, streaming exclusively on the Head-On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Living in the wasteland of the free. We got preachers dealing in politics and diamond mines. In their speech is growing.
You want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here are some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark cfv.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
And we're back for another hour of Strictly Confidential, hour two of the 100th show of Strictly Confidential. This means that my dear faithful listeners have listened to me for approximately 200 hours. And, oh my God, you are deeply appreciated. Later in this hour, we are going to be doing the Gay Bar Across the Street segment. I was told by some of my listeners that we should, rather than rename it, we should keep it Gay Bar Across the Street because it has some history here on the show. The early shows, we did the Gay Bar Across the Street, and so we'll keep that. But what we should do is give that Gay Bar Across the Street a name. I'm thinking of naming the Gay Bar Across the Street Rumors after the gay bar in Small Town Gay Bar. That seems like a good name. Until we hear differently from the listeners, let's call the bar Across the Street Rumors after a Small Town Gay Bar, which is a wonderful movie. Later in the hour, as I said, we're going to be doing that segment. Tonight we're going to be featuring the incredible Jerry Bonham. The mixes that you're going to hear this evening from Jerry Bonham are actually taken from the Remember the Party 30th anniversary of the Trocadero Transfer. Jerry was with us in October, by the way, if you'd like to hear that interview, October the 3rd, and you could go back to that date, strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and it's an amazing set. I'm sure you'll love it. This, the Trocadero Transfer 30th anniversary was huge. In the future, you'll be hearing, we've heard responses now from Alice Nikitin, Jerry Bonham, Bobby Vittoretti, Victor. By the way, Victor is going to be doing the set tomorrow evening. That's VJC Victor from Disco 935 in New York City. And, of course, our dear, dear friend Larry Sanders will be running some sets this week also. But tomorrow night it is Victor. And, by the way, if you're interested in seeing some of Jerry Bonham's work, just go to jerrybonham.com. You know, the story that Jeff was telling us, about this battle that's gone on for so many years prompts me to want to tell you some interesting stories about the history of this movement that goes back as far as the 50s. Contrary to popular opinion, as I've said before, this whole thing did not start with Stonewall in, I believe that was 1969. That was revolutionary, but that was not the starting point. In fact, today, January the 13th, 50 years ago today, in 50 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court delivered its first ever pro-gay ruling. That was in 1958, 50 years ago, and it was a ruling regarding One Incorporated versus Olson. And it was a landmark decision that allowed a magazine for gays and lesbians to be sent through the U.S. mail. There's a long story about One, and I'll tell you some about it. The story's a little bit complex. Let's start here. And a lot of this, by the way, comes from Jim Burroway. We've got to have him on the show over at Box Turtle Bulletin. The man is amazing. But back in 2006, it was December of 2006, Box Turtle Bulletin, by way of Jim Burroway, did a story about a small club called the Black Cat. It was on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles. Now, the Black Cat Club has come up on this program before. I believe it came up when we had Denny Meyer on the show. The Black Cat was a club that the Army and the various branches of the U.S. military back in the 50s would station soldiers out in front of the Black Cat so that they could catch any service members who were leaving the base, which they were would be leaving with permission, of course, but they were not supposed to go to the Black Cat because the Black Cat was a gay bar. And that's one of the first introductions to the Black Cat that we've heard on this show. But on a New Year's Eve, this is back in the 50s, would have been 40 years ago, it was on Sunset Boulevard, there were 60 or 70 patrons. They were gathered together during those final moments. It was in 1966, rather. And they were counting down the last few seconds to midnight, and there were couples all standing around and standing next to each other and watching the countdown clock approach zero, and the shouts and the raised hands, many people were yelling Happy New Year and singing Auld Lang Syne. They did something that couples do all over the world, and that is, those men in that gay bar back in that time kissed, as many people do at midnight on New Year's Eve. But you see, that night, immediately, six plainclothes officers began viciously beating them and arresting people who were kissing. They were called, they referred to them as kissing offenders. Several people tried to escape to a nearby bar called New Faces, but undercover officers followed them there, and they raided that bar as well. One of the New Faces workers was beaten so badly by the police that he had a cracked rib, a fractured skull, and a ruptured spleen. The six Black Cat kissers, as they were called, were convicted of lewd or dissolute conduct in a public place. And it was conduct that consisted of male couples hugging and kissing. Now, according to one police report, one couple had kissed on the mouth for 3 to 5 seconds. Apparently, it takes 3 to 5 seconds to transgress into the area that is called lewd and dissolute conduct by the LAPD. It's very hard to describe what it was like to be gay back in L.A. in the 50s and the 60s. It was virtually illegal to be gay in Los Angeles. Undercover officers expressed a lot of zeal and enthusiasm to clean up the streets. There was no place safe. There were not private homes that were not safe. Where LGBT folks lived, the police would follow them home for bars, figure out where they lived. If there's a private party in that home, the party would be raided. I remember those days here in Tallahassee. Bars and clubs were not safe. Gay bars barely existed. And if one did exist, the minute it gained a reputation as a gay hangout, it would be raided and shut down. And the undercover officers would also infiltrate private parties that were suspected of being frequented by gay men. if they saw any sort of what you could refer to as social touching, that would be holding hands or dancing or even simple small talk, that in the imagination of an undercover officer, if that small talk could, quote, conceivably lead to something more, they were arrested. And entrapment was normal back in those days, and it did not take much to get arrested. Simply arranging to meet someone else for dinner or exchanging a phone number with an undercover officer was enough to trigger an arrest, and being labeled a sex offender under California law. Now, this was several years before Stonewall, and this rebellion went on in LA. The gay folks stood their ground in defense of the kiss. They had put up with enough, but the kissing in a bar at midnight was more than they could deal with. It was a case of what the LGBT folks called do or die. More than 200 activists gathered at the corner of Sanborn and Sunset to protest the arrests and the ongoing police brutality and the intimidation. As time went by, a few people who would dare publicly identify themselves as homosexuals for fear of being arrested began to speak out more and more openly, and there were first-time gay rights protests in California led to the formation of a group called Pride, which is a gay rights group from L.A. It swelled into the ranks of the Mattachine Society, which is one of the very, very old gay rights organizations, one of the earliest. That was founded by Dr. Frank Kameny, and I'm still attempting to get in touch with him for an interview. He is a very, well, I'm sure he's still spry, but he's getting on. It'd be really doing to have Dr. Frank Kameny on the show before too much time passes. He is an incredible resource and not to be missed. You know, the other raids that the police, Los Angeles was just amazed. You see, all the previous raids that the police did there, it pushed the LGBT folks further and further underground. But L.A. came of age that night about 40 years ago. In the publicity that followed that, Charles W. Talley and Benny Norman Baker were able to find some very, very brave heterosexual lawyers who had agreed to handle their appeal. There were no gay lawyers who were willing to publicly come out to take that case. Charles is the one, by the way, who is described in the police report as kissing someone on the mouth for 3 to 5 seconds. Good for you. Benny appealed the convictions, and it went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. But even the U.S. Supreme Court, a man-man kiss was way too radical. In 1968, the court refused to hear Talley versus the state of California, so their convictions stood. There's no question we've come a long, long way since 1966, but look what our friends over at Soul Force are still trying to do, just having a dialogue with the church. Of course, these days, male couples can be beaten for holding hands in public or killed. I have a stack of stories several inches thick. In fact, I could do two or three shows just rattling off murder after murder after murder. I choose not to do that. I mentioned it enough that you know that it's happening every day, and in fact it is. You know, just the ordinary act of placing your hand in another man's hand, it's the same thing that heterosexual couples do with ease and innocence. It is just too provocative. A kiss back then, or holding hands back then in public, would be absolutely heroic. Of course, heterosexual couples can kiss wherever they please. And lesbians, you know, kissing gets considered hot. And a kiss is, though, still a very radical act when the kiss is shared between men. Critics now talk about Will and Grace as evident that gay men are accepted, but if you'll recall, Will rarely ever had a boyfriend. It wasn't until the show had been on the air for 8 seasons that Will was finally allowed to kiss a boyfriend. This kiss was the character James Hansen. So, 40 years after the Black Cat raid, men still can't be seen kissing each other unless they're... unless they're, you know, wanting their television ratings to fall down or get beaten up. So, you know, what are you supposed to do? What are lovers supposed to do? Since 1966, we still remain a huge threat. So, Jim Burroway closes this by saying, I don't care who you are or who you kiss or why you kiss. You can kiss him for love. You can kiss him for lust. You can kiss him because he's cute. You can kiss him because he's the love of your life. Or you can kiss him because he's a total stranger. But whatever you do, kiss him. I mentioned earlier about the post office. This goes back to the 50s also. It was 50 years ago today. As I said, it was January 13, 1958, that the Supreme Court delivered the first pro-gay ruling that allowed magazines for gays and lesbians to be sent through the U.S. mail. One Incorporated was the name of the magazine. It was founded by several members of the L.A. Mattachine Society, who I mentioned earlier. And the people felt, Mattachine and the people at One Incorporated felt that a strong nationwide voice for education, this is back in the 50s, mind you, a nationwide voice for education and advocacy was desperately, desperately needed. So they filed articles of incorporation. The article said that the specific and primary purpose was to publish and disseminate a magazine dealing primarily with homosexuality from the scientific, the historical, and the critical point of view, and to aid in the social integration and the rehabilitation of the sexual variant stigma that was going on. The magazine was very, very well done. It wasn't just any magazine. It was a first-class product. It was typeset. It wasn't, you know, up till then, you know, there had been some little flyers handed out, like, you know, mimeograph sheets, but the One magazine was a class act. It debuted in January of 1953, and the slick publishing and the well-done layout quickly caught gay and lesbians' attention across the country, and circulation went up to 2,000 in just a very few months, although most of the subscribers paid extra to have their magazines delivered in an unmarked paper wrapper. They were charged extra because, of course, it takes more time to put these magazines in a manila envelope or wrap them in paper, plain brown paper or whatever. But that was the time. And, you know, by today's standards, the magazine was very tame. There was no racy pictures. The fiction articles are written by some of the contributing authors. It was limited to longing and desire. There was rarely any evidence of physical contact to the pages. The magazine was totally no racy. Totally vanilla in that point. But what they lacked in racy, they made up for with plain, pure audacity. And they covered politics, civil rights, legal issues, police harassment. Of course, that was especially harsh in L.A., where One was incorporated. They talked about social issues, philosophical issues, historical issues regarding LGBT, psychological topics, etc. And One magazine quickly became a voice for thousands of LGBT folks. And, you know, letters to the editor then had to be published anonymously. There were signature lines like M from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Another letter was from F in Beaumont, Texas. One did not dare put their name out. So there was a big push along about that time by President Eisenhower, who signed an executive order in April of that very same year that barred gays and lesbians from federal employment because of sexual perversion. And they fired over 400 GLBT folks from civil services during those next few years. Homosexuality was criminalized in most states. It was considered a mental illness by the psychiatric profession. Gays were denounced as a security risk and a risk, and this is still true, a risk to the very moral fabric of the nation. Sound familiar? Some things don't change, some do. Homosexuals were treated as subversives. So along comes the FBI, and they launch a major crackdown on homosexuality across the U.S., and gays and lesbians were losing their jobs for, you know, merely receiving a publication like One in the mail, and vice squads were setting up entrapment stings in the bars. But here's what happened. The FBI happened to see a copy of One magazine, and oh, lordy, they were not pleased. They immediately launched an investigation to shut it down. And you see, the folks who wrote the articles for One had to have day jobs to support themselves. It was a labor of love, much like the Hound Radio Network is a labor of love. We all have to have some way. Well, that's another story. Don't want to go off in that direction. But when they found out about one, they started writing. The people who wrote the articles for one were, of course, employed. The FBI began writing to those employers. And, of course, these people depended on their day jobs for the income, but they were telling the employers that that the individuals were deviant and that they were security risks, and you know, it was quite ugly. Then after a period of time, after the FBI, you know, caused this huge stir, they decided it wasn't worth their time, and one magazine continued to be published, and the job of shutting down one magazine fell to the post office. The most efficient organization. Well, I won't go there because some of our listeners may very well work for the post office. I sent something to the post office to a friend in California just the other day, and it arrived in record time. I was totally shocked. Way to go, post office. But in any case, the post office, it was their job to shut down one magazine. And so the Los Angeles Postal Authorities, they went through each issue and read it and scanned it and looked at it, you know, and probably laughed and probably who knows what they did. But they decided whether or not they were. It was legal to ship that magazine, each issue, mind you, under the post office anti-obscenity standards. And mind you, there was no obscenity in it. That was against the law. So you know, and it, but since, you know, homosexuality was illegal in most states, one magazine had an additional problem. They could be charged with being guilty of promoting criminal activity. I'm serious. I kid you not. This is what was going on. So the post office finally acted when they got the August issue. They held up the August issue for 3 weeks, deciding whether or not it violated federal laws. And guess what was on the cover of the August 1953? What were the big words, two of them actually, printed on the cover of the August 1953 copy of the U.S. Post Office? Two words: homosexual marriage. That's right. That was the tipping point. The post office was not going to put up with a magazine passing through their mail system, thank you very much, with an article regarding homosexual marriage. So finally, officials in Washington, D.C. decided that it really didn't violate the obscenity standards, and they ordered the post office to release it for shipment. But then it was very, very late, and then the one magazine... you know, the next issue, they said, we are not grateful, you know, because they were supposed to be very grateful that the post office actually released that magazine. It was late, as I say, and so they had to, one magazine had to actually extend the subscription by a couple of months to some people who never got their copies, but... anyway, the magazine wrote in big print on the next one, one is not grateful. One thanks no one for this reluctant acceptance. You see, never before had an agency the size of the post office admitted that the homosexuals have rights to actually mail, because that's primarily how the admission came down. The Home One magazine didn't adopt the old thank you attitude, and they said, the admission is welcome, but it's tardy and it's far from enough. So that was solved, and then we have the Senate Foreign Relations Committee come after them. And he wrote a protest after the magazines were mailed. He wrote a protest to the Postmaster General about the 1954 issue, and the issue, by the way, was called The Importance of Being Different. And so the senator vigorously protested and about the United States mail system transmitting a so-called magazine devoted to advancement of perversion and allowing homosexual magazines to operate. He says, runs utterly contrary to every moral principle, runs utterly contrary to the intentions to safeguard our nation's youngsters. It is opposite of every purpose of the U.S. government. These were the rules, by the way, One Magazine. Every issue had to meet these standards. One, Lonely Hearts ads or ads seeking pen pals or ads seeking meetings could not be placed in One Magazine. There would be no cheesecake arts or photos. These are the rules that were set up by One Magazine, by the way, so that they could exist. Otherwise, they knew they'd have people coming down on them. And readers would say, well, what about all the girly magazines? And but anyway, that's not something you could do in the one magazine. Descriptions of sex acts and also any preliminary things that might occur before a sex act, those were banned. And no homosexual literature was permitted. Descriptions of experiences must not be too explicit. For instance, this was allowed. John was my friend for a year. But what was not permitted would be, John and I made love last night. You see where I'm headed? That description of homosexuality is a practice. It might encourage others, and you can't be too enthusiastic about it. And any fiction with too much physical contact between characters in the stories couldn't rub knees, feel thighs, hold hands, soak backs, or undress one another. So in any case... The editors are trying to sue the post office. It gets very complicated the way all the different agencies went. But the bottom line, and I'll wrap this story up, is one took this to the U.S. Supreme Court. And to everybody's utter shock and dismay, the Supreme Court agreed to take the case. And in the first time ever dealing with homosexuality, the Supreme Court issued a short one-sentence decision. And they didn't bother to hear oral arguments. That decision, it overturned two lower courts, which had approved the post office not sending it. But the court expanded the First Amendment free speech and press freedoms and said that, yes, the magazine was fine. They were violating their civil rights. So there is no more one magazine, but just pointing out to you that this stuff goes back many years, and this is only in documented history. Can you imagine what people put up back in... Well, we will never know some of it. Never, ever know some of it. Interesting today about Reverend Huckabee. You know how secretive he's been about the sermons that he preached in the Baptist churches in Arkansas? Nobody can find the sermons. The churches are refusing to release them. Not a shred of any sermon that he preached for, Lord, how long was it, 12, 15 years? Forgotten how long, but many, many years. He preached a little sermon at a very small New Hampshire church about being part of God's army. And this is just recently, and some of it's leaking out. He told them from the pulpit, when we become believers, it's as if we have signed up to be a part of God's army, to be soldiers for Christ. There was much enthusiasm in the congregation of that. Here we have another example of the militant Christ, and as if God needed our help. God would like us to get the hell out of the way, quite frankly. Another quote, when you give yourself to Christ, some relationships have to go. It's no longer your life, you have signed it over. So here it's being presented as not that Christ adds anything to your life. Indeed, you lose much by giving yourself to Christ, according to the theology of Huckabee. He also said that... He likened service to God as to be the same as service in the military. And he said, and I quote, there is suffering in the conditioning for battle. You obey the orders. So there you have it. You obey the orders. You've signed it over. So you sign yourself over. You have to obey the orders, and you've signed up to be part of God's army, and I assume that the Huckabee has signed up to be the general and the other people of that ilk who beat people up for profit from the pulpit are the generals and the leaders. And you have to obey the orders. The orders they give, by the way. You know, getting back to, back just dropping briefly back into 1957, the ACLU wouldn't touch LGBT rights back in the 50s. They put out a statement that said the American Civil Union is occasionally called upon to defend the civil liberties of homosexuals. It is not within the province of the union to evaluate the social validity of laws aimed at the suppression or the, get this, elimination of homosexuals. You know, I'm even a card-carrying member of the ACLU these days. I didn't realize that until today. But back in the 50s, they were just as homophobic as everybody else. But, no, hang on to your hats. This just came as a huge... With all this I've told you, I realize that Jeff Lutz is the only uplifting person you've heard of this show tonight. Oh, but my stars. This is the headline, I kid you not. Gay couples more likely to have satisfying relationships. This is from a series of research studies. It's been revealed that those in same-sex relationships have an increased likelihood of a better family and marital relations than those in a heterosexual relationship. Say it isn't so. The executive director of the Rockaway Institute, his name is Robert J. Green, says that flexibility of gender roles is the key here. The flexibility of gender roles and the equal division of parenting and household tasks result in more same-sex couples having healthier relationships than heterosexual. It all comes down to a greater equality in the relationship. Research shows that lesbian and gay couples, by virtue of being composed of two partners of the same gender, have a head start in escaping traditional gender roles. And these are gender roles that often cause divisions and power imbalances and dissatisfaction in many heterosexual relationships. Well, my goodness. And says in the battle of all male versus all female, lesbian couples have been identified as having the healthiest relationships. Way to go, lesbians! With gay male couples coming in second place, well, you got to hand it to our lesbian brothers and sisters. You go, kids. And followed up by the gay male couples coming in second, and mixed gender relationships come in third. Mixed gender bad, same gender good. That's what they'd be telling you, wouldn't they? Oh, you know me too well. Oh, my stars. Oh, and by the way, Lonnie last week in chat mentioned that why is it that every institute, every organization that, you know, tries to beat the hell out of the LGBT folks had the word family in it? Well, Lonnie, I got another example for you. The Spanish Party is pledging to create a family ministry. Yes, in response to the Pope and the bishop who said that LGBT folks were a threat to world peace, I think, and there were other remarks. You see, this same-sex marriages, it was all legalized under the socialist government, and there have been many clashes with the Roman Catholic Church. Well, there's an election coming up very soon. It's just coming up in a few weeks, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And right now, the Socialist Party and something called the PP Party, and it's the two word letters P. It stands for Partido Popular, which I assume means the Popular Party. Okay, the Popular Party says LGBT bad, Pope right, and the Socialist Party says LGBT fine, all Spaniards have rights, Pope wrong. Okay. Well, so in order to win, there's a segment of the Spanish population who's not real thrilled about LGBT rights, and of course that there's always a segment, or always probably will be. So the socialist government is pledging to the voters that they are in fact going to create a family ministry. Now, I don't mean a biblical or a church ministry. I mean, they have like the ministry of, you know, all their governmental offices are called ministries there. Okay, there's going to be a new family minister, something like our Homeland Security. Family Security. Oh, yeah, here's the election date. It's coming up 58 days. Is it about 58 days it's going to be coming up? And also, there's much controversy in Spain right now accusing the Catholic Church of trying to manipulate elections in Spain. By making the remarks about LGBT marriage just a few weeks ago. Sound familiar? Remember when wasn't it Kerry who was refused communion? You know, the Vatican has a real problem with influencing elections, but, you know, what can I tell you? I'm remaining neutral here. So in any case, here we go, the... Socialist Party is saying that Spain does not need to be lectured about morals, and they accuse the Roman Catholic Church hierarchy of lacking respect for the democratic process. And the Popular Party is going to create a family ministry. I'm sure they need that to protect them from us. And in even more absurd news, male tailors in an Afghan province have been barred from measuring female clients for fittings. It's a new local ruling. Male tailors can no longer measure women for their clothes. They need to be measured by female tailors. Now, this is interesting because Afghan women by and large are known for excellent needlework and dressmaking skills. However, and you just knew this was coming, the overwhelming majority of tailors are men. This goes back to the 2000, the Taliban, they were involved with the Islamic government heavily, and all the, that was back when the women had to wear the burqas, they were forced to wear those and cover their entire bodies. Another thing is they want the Taliban there is coming up, and basically they're in control of the government, as best I can tell. They want the National Islamic Body to ban TV airings of soap operas. Well, I'm all for that. I can get right behind that, but no soap operas because it is un-Islamic. That's not the reason I would ban it, but, you know, to each his own. My apologies to those of you who work in the soap opera business. Please do nasty emails. Oh, yes, and they want to bring back public punishment again. No more of this take you to jail, hang you in secret. We want to beat you in public. This seems to be one of the main things they like to do, the public lashings. And I beat up on fundamentalist Islamic people just as well as I beat up on the fundamentalist Christians. It's not that I prefer one or the other. It's just they're both so pitiful. You know, one day you throw a dart at one, the next day you throw a dart at the other. What can I tell you? Oh, yes, and I need to point out that the American Family Association boycott regarding Ford, the American Family Association is now claiming that they have destroyed Ford. Of course, it's based in Tupelo, and they're saying, while we don't take full credit for Ford's dismal financial performance in recent months, the Family Association, America Family Association, says its boycott of the automaker has undoubtedly played a part. Good old Don Wildman, he is the founder of the AFA. He says the pro-family boycott that his organization initiated 21 months ago is not solely responsible for the December 2007 9% drop in sales, or the 2006 12% drop in sales, but we do say that we had a significant amount of influence with that. And he says that nearly 800,000 people signed the petition, blah, 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 blah. And what was that? What was it? Is an ad because, was it lesbians in Volvos? Or it was something about a Volvo. I don't know. There's something about a Volvo. You'd think it'd be the Ford Probe, but no, it's the Volvo. So we're coming up on 10:29 here. What we're going to do is visit our gay bar across the street, and we're going to name it Rumors. We're going to have an intro for this. I'm going to have to whip one up at some point this week, a little musical intro. I've got several choices. I just didn't get a chance to whip one up today. So it's still a diamond in the rough. The gay bar across the street is a diamond in the rough, but tonight is a fabulous music set. Jerry Bonham, and Jerry, this is actually was played. This is an 8-CD collection of the actual music that was played in the Trocadero Transfer 30th anniversary party. This particular set comes from CD3, and we lifted it out of the middle of the CD. So what you're hearing is the Trocadero in progress. By the way, if you'd like to find out more about the Trocadero, if you don't know about that, all of us elderly LGBT folks know about it. Some of you younger ones may not. You can go to rememberthepartythepartycom and find out more about it, or you can go to Jerry Bonham's site, which is jerrybonham.com. Come. Did I just say that? Come. And in any case, the CDs are... Jerry sent us an entire set. Let's see. He sent those back in, was it April? No, it was after that. He sent these just after his interview. He was with us. When was that? Yes, October the 3rd. Jerry was with us, and that was just prior to the Trocadero transfer 30th anniversary. And so it was about a month later that these came in the mail. They're just now coming in handy. Thank you for joining us with this, Jerry. And so this evening we present to you Jerry Bonham playing at the Trocadero transfer.
About your baby, ain't it all like this woman? says there's nothing really wrong with me. I'm just missing my man. So, honey, please, come on home as soon as you can.
Bye. what a difference a day makes. 24 little hours from the sun and the flowers.
Great universities never set out simply to reflect the communities in which they exist. Rather, they serve as seedbeds of change in an ever-changing world. They take pride in being places where truth is freely sought, where inquiry is encouraged, where new ideas and new ways can develop and flourish at the expense of the old. When a true academic community, instructors and students together, acts and expresses itself freely, without fear, all of society benefits. Concord University is already using this new set of challenges as opportunities to serve in ways that strengthen its dedication to community, its commitment to service. In graduate education, in professional services to working professionals, in highly respected fields of study where standards remain high, in continuing to place graduates in the very best professional and graduate schools in the nation, Concord University remains the very best higher education bargain in this region. Don't ever allow yourself to accept anything less. Concord University, still since 1872, an education you can put to work. For an appointment, call 1-800-344-6679.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America.
And we're back. We're back for the closing part of Strictly Confidential. I want to tell you that, in fact, our friend John Fox, all the way down in Australia, will be on tonight at 12 midnight with a live show. That's 12 midnight Eastern time for All Foxed Up. And immediately following this show, in just a few minutes, at 11 p.m. Eastern time, myself and John Fox and Bob Kincaid will be doing the horn section. The horn section is a round table, totally unrehearsed. We have no idea what we're going to talk about portion of an evening on the Head On Radio Network. We'd love for you to join us. That will be at 11 p.m., and John Fox will be at 12 p.m., midnight, the witching hour. And, again, that was our friend Jerry Bonham with the fabulous Trocadero mix. Thank you, Jerry, for sending that music to us. We'll be using Jerry's music again and again. It will take many, many months to explore all of the Trocadero mixes. And tomorrow night, I should tell you that our DJ tomorrow night for the Rumors Gay Bar Across the Street section will be Victor. Victor is the DJ at Disco 935 in New York City. And he has sent in a couple of wonderful sets. He will be with us tomorrow night. That's Thursday night. And he will also be the DJ on, he'll be with us tomorrow night, Tuesday night, and also with us Thursday night. Now, on Wednesday night, we have Larry Sanders back with us to do a mixed set for us on Wednesday night, and Larry Sanders will also be the DJ on Friday night. Now, coming up in the following week, we'll be adding Alex Nikitin to the DJ set, and we'll be adding Bobby Vittoretti next week also. So this is turning out to be a who's who in the list of DJs, and I couldn't be happier. And what a thrill to be able to associate with these folks that I only read about on record labels when I was just a little DJ growing up. So meeting these people is like a dream come true, what wonderful people they are. All of these people, by the way, have been guests on the show, and I encourage you to listen to their archives. I didn't look up Jerry's archive. Yes, I did. I told you about Jerry's date. Jerry was here on October the... Was it the, yes, the 3rd, and that interview is on Strictly Confidential Radio's site, strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and that's Jerry Bonham for October the 3rd. Let's see, what else do I want to tell you? Oh, yes, I was so sorry, I didn't get to tell you guys at the close of the show last week. Things were a little bit, on Fridays I normally like to let everyone know about our weekend schedule. I realize it's Monday, but darn it, I missed it on Friday night, and I'm going to do it tonight. Our weekend schedule is something that you don't want to miss. We have on Saturdays Matt Sowards coming up at 6 p.m. on Saturday evenings. When the other progressive networks are doing replays, we're actually running live shows. Matt Sowards will be joining us at 6 p.m. on Saturday evening, this coming Saturday, followed at 9 p.m. by Billy Shears with his incredible musical program, Night Sounds, followed at 12 p.m. midnight by Rick Goodner, who is the horn psychologist. Or is he a psychiatrist? I think he's a psychologist. Either way, we definitely need many, many psychologists and psychiatrists here. So join us for Rick's Place. Rick is a wonderful friend to the network. So... let's see. There's some leftover stories here. There always are. They're far too long to tell you in this short period of time. I'll bring them up again tomorrow evening. Got a big scandal at Oral Roberts University involving Benny Hinn and a woman who is molesting teenage boys in a hotel room, and she's like Mrs. Roberts. And you're just not going to believe the dirt I have for you tomorrow evening regarding the Oral Roberts University. Far be it from me not to report a fall from grace. I'm sorry, but that's really what I love to do. I've been stuck to for so long, I don't mind sticking it back. So in any case, stay tuned, and we'll have both John and myself and Bob Kincaid in just a few minutes with the horn section. So in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...
Truth that Ask any musician. The best music happens when the sheet music gets put aside and the gang just sits down and jams. Same thing here on The Horn. America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to The Horn Section.